Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA, to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Hey, it's Jeff here. What you're about to hear is the recording from our weekly Context and Clarity live show that I co-host with Catherine McPhail. Every week we bring in a special guest that will help us dig even deeper and find even more clarity around the most popular Context and Clarity topics. This version of Context and Clarity is simulcast to Facebook and LinkedIn and YouTube and Twitch. Oh, and did I mention that they're live? We're operating without a net, so we may hit a few rough patches and stumble every once in a while. But I think these guests and these conversations are important enough that we really shouldn't keep them to ourselves. So with that, let's jump into this week's episode. This episode of Context and Clarity is supported by Twinmotion, the simple real-time rendering solution to create high-quality imagery, client presentations, and interactive experiences that help communicate your design ideas fast. To learn more, visit Twinmotion at twinmotion.link/clarity. This episode of the Context and Clarity podcast is also supported by Section Cut, the interactive virtual conference from our friends at Monograph. Learn more at sectioncut.com. All right, Entree Architect community, it's 4 p.m. Eastern, which means it's time for the Entree Architect Context and Clarity Live for Thursday, July 29th, 2021. Thank you for joining us. As you get here, say hi. Let us know that you're here. Let us know where you're joining the conversation from. We already see some friends. We see John Kenning in Massachusetts. Christian, we see you in Ithaca. And Kurt, we see you up there in Flint, Michigan. Great to have you and anybody else that's joining us. Say hi. Anybody that's listening to us in the future, in the podcast version of Context and Clarity here, welcome. Glad that you're joining us today. We've got a great guest. We'll have a great conversation today, as usual, in the simulcast version that we call Context and Clarity Live, that's streaming out not only to the podcast, but to the Entree Architect Community Facebook group, to LinkedIn, to YouTube, and to our many, many, many followers on Twitch. We'll see how many of those folks weigh in today, but say hi when you get here. Rod is channeling Romper Room, for those of you that remember Romper Room. Romper Bumper, Stomper Boo. Thanks for joining us from Monroe, Louisiana today, Rod. And Facebook user from Houston, I'm going to guess maybe that's Gene. Hi, Gene.
It is.
All right. Welcome. Let's see. Kurt says he's multitasking with the AIA virtual conference. I forgot about that. We are.
That's what I'm doing too.
Are you really? That's good to know. That's good to know that you are multitasking on your own show.
Our show. So it's only a quarter of me.
That makes me feel good. Yeah. Well, you know, and to all of all the folks at AIA that are out there, we're sorry that we're preempting the conference today, but we have important conversations here to have. So we will we'll get into that. Catherine, welcome.
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
My new ear, whatever you call them. So that's exciting. Yeah,
those are AirPods, as the kids call them.
Okay.
Yeah, that's some fancy bling that you have there. AirPods Pro, as they were. Pro. So nice.
Yeah. Yep. I know. Only the best for me. That's what I say. Well, you know, I decided I had to buy stuff for myself before I listened to the cash flow conversation, honestly. It kind of got me over to Best Buy.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
I'm kidding, Jeff, but I am not.
No, I can see how, you know, some in the audience may think, yep, we're about to lose all of our financial freedom. All those bad habits that we've got are about to be chased out of us through this conversation today.
Yeah, maybe.
But one of the things that I appreciate, we were talking about this backstage, I guess, before we went live with our guest, who we'll introduce here in just a minute. For those of you out there that don't know this, Catherine and I, you know, is leading up to these conversations, these Context and Clarity Live conversations. Oftentimes, we're listening to podcast interviews that our guests have been on previously. And so I'll listen to something, I'll text Catherine, she'll listen to one, and she'll text me. And some people may call that stalking. We call it research. But one of the things that I really appreciate about our guest, who is, you know, basically as high as it gets in terms of qualifications and accomplishments when in finance, in the finance world, I really appreciate the fact that they make everything understandable. They bring everything down to the level that I can understand it. My dad was an accountant. I ran as far away from accounting as I possibly could, which meant architecture school, which will be maybe an interesting tie into the conversation today. But I really appreciate this guest's ability to make all of this understandable for those of us that have no, probably most of us have no business and certainly accounting or finance training in architecture school. So I'm looking forward to this conversation today. One thing that we should remind you, if you're out there on Facebook, of course, you're inside the Entree Architect Community Facebook group, which is a private Facebook group. And because of Facebook's privacy rules, your name and your avatar are not allowed to be released to Restream where we are right now, unless you give Facebook permission. And if you'd like to show up besides something like Facebook user with no picture, a generic little symbol there, you can give Facebook permission to allow that information out by going to chat.restream.io/FB, as in Facebook. And that URL is in the bottom left of your screen right now. So right now I see Kurt, like he said, he's multitasking with AIA virtual conference right now. And then I see a Facebook user from Richmond, Virginia, who I bet is Louie, but I might be wrong about that. And then we see John Jones. From 1 hour from Grand Central in Connecticut. Welcome back, John. So if you don't want to show up as Facebook user, go to chat.restream.io/FB and you can give Facebook permission to let your name and avatar out like Pam has from San Diego and Tim Dearborn from Stockton, California. So thanks to all of you for joining us. As you get here, say hi and let us know where you're joining the conversation from. All right, Catherine, what have I forgotten?
I think, well, besides the obvious of not bringing a guest out yet.
Yep, I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready. All right, Barry, Okay. Good evening from Scotland. Thanks for joining us today. All right, I think it's time. Let's bring our guest out. We have a very special guest today. Our guest sees numbers everywhere. She's a crocheter, a knitter, an empowerer, and a doer. She's an owner and the CFO of tech first century plus old design firm Mancini Duffy. And maybe most importantly, she's also a mother and a wife. Bolanli Williams Oli, welcome to Context and Clarity Live.
Thank you so much, guys. Jeff, I need to take that intro that you did for me. That's the first time I've heard someone, you know, put everything I do together in a different way. So kudos to that.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, kudos you can to have that. So excited to be here.
Excellent. We're happy to have you here. One of the things, and I completely forgot about this. Usually what we do is the first person in. So today, excuse me, today the first person I see on my screen is Kurt, I guess, from Flint, Michigan. So we award the crocheted bathtub to the first person that arrives on the scene for these conversations. And when we found out, Christian says we're in the crochet. We're into crochet in this group. Yeah, so that was a huge surprise and a thrill for us to know that you enjoy crocheting.
Yes.
Yeah, I texted Jeff about that this morning. Yeah, she loves to crochet.
I do. So right now I don't do it as much where I would do it like all year round. I usually do projects, you know, towards the end of, you know, in the holidays, towards the end of the year, I would crochet hats to donate to NICUs or, you know, babies in Nigeria where I'm from. And anytime I have a new baby, you know, my friends have a new baby, they're getting a hat. I try to make sure that happens. My grandmother taught me using, this is very interesting, and this is probably out of the conversation, but
let's see where
back
this goes.
In Nigeria, well, she's my grand aunt's grandmother. She made knitting pins for me out of bicycle, you know, the wheel on the bicycle?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how she, like there was a bicycle that was old, and that's how, those are my first set of knitting pins when I was younger.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, rest her soul. Cool. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Pretty resourceful of her.
Yeah. Well, yeah. One question I think that we, and Catherine and I talked about this a little bit, is with everything that you do, and of course we'll unravel some of this, no pun intended, but with all of the things that you do, the CFO of Mancini Duffy, and some, you have several initiatives which we'll talk about, and two young ish kids, you know, you plan parties and you do all of these things, but somehow you still find time to crochet and to knit. That I think is admirable.
Thank you.
What does that allow you to do? You know, I imagine you sit there and you're doing your thing. Is that just a total break from everything else, or what happens when you're doing
that? Yes. So with crocheting, I mean, you know, you can't really do other things. I mean, you could listen to music or podcasts or whatever the case may be, but you're actually using your hands to create something. So for me, it's an outlet, right? And if I'm making something for a family member, then it's an act of service for me. So, but it gives me a break. It gives me a break from having to do like real, you know, brain work all the time. and I always enjoy it. I used to crochet all the time on the train to work. Like, you know, it was, relaxing too, right? In this fast paced world, you kind of have to find something that helps you unplug.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. And I, you know, I think, again, between Catherine and I, we've listened to several interviews that you've done on podcasts. And, you know, it seems to me that taking a break, the mental break, really ties in a lot with one of the things that surprised me a little bit, right? We've sort of built this conversation today as about cash flow for architects. And, you know, we'll get to that probably. Maybe not. Maybe we'll go off on some tangent. But one of the things that surprised me in listening to you talk about cash flow and finance and all of these things is wellness.
Yeah.
And I heard you say that for the first time. It was a real light bulb moment. Like, yes. You know, it came right on the heels of talking about mindset. But when you talk about wellness, you know, the mindset, the money mindset and all that, why is that part of it so important to you?
Oh my gosh. So, I feel like, you know, when it comes, especially wellness and finance, right? I feel like, it's something that you probably do not hear all the time, which was, you know, which is why it was probably an aha moment to you, right? Because when you hear numbers, when you hear CFO or anyone in accounting, you hardly hear them saying, well, how does your numbers make you feel? Or like, you know, but the wellness piece for me is huge because in our personal finances, if we don't know what's going on, we don't feel good, right? The same logic applies to your businesses. If you understand you're in control, you've mastered, or you're on your way to mastering and really keying into the importance of understanding your numbers as a business owner, as an employee, or, you know, whatever position you hold, your temperature or the way you feel, right, begins to improve, right? There's a health piece to it. If your business is going well, you're able to make better decisions mentally. You're able to make better business decisions. You're in a position of, power, I would say, right? And, you're just able to sleep at night, right? You're able to sleep at night knowing that you can pay your employees, right? The employees that are working expect their paycheck every 2 weeks. And so myself as a business owner and also, you know, managing the finances, if I understand, I know that everything, you know, my business is doing okay, I can make the business decisions I need to, then your wellness, your overall wellness is improved, right? And I think that piece is missing when it comes to, right, understanding why you should pay attention to looking at your numbers. So that for me is just huge. I need all of us to be able to sleep at night a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I've even heard you say that, you know, sometimes things aren't going that well, right? Yep. Sometimes you are struggling. The cash flow is a little off or, you know, whatever's going on, but still knowing what the situation is and not having,
not running blind, right? You're just not running blind. Yeah. If you're driving a car, you can see where you're going. That
right.
If there's traffic on the road, you know that you're approaching traffic. You know how to navigate. It's the same thing that applies to our businesses, right? You're in a position of our proactiveness. If there are issues that are arising, you can see it through your numbers. If things are good, you can see it through your numbers. You're not just running blind and not knowing what exactly is happening in your business. Yeah. So it's huge. It's huge when it comes to understanding and making the appropriate business decisions or knowing what lever to pull,
yeah.
Right? Knowing what lever to activate in your business. So
yeah. Yeah. And I think the car analogy, the driving analogy is a great one. There's, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, when is it the most stressful, you know, when you're driving a car? Well, you know, I don't know about where everybody else is, but sometimes around here, it can get really foggy.
Yep.
That's when I can't see, when I don't know what's going on. So I love the car analogy. And you've mentioned a couple of times now, the ability to make good decisions. And I think, you know, this is predominantly an audience of small firm architects. Because we're simulcast today, we could certainly have some that are from larger firms and other, you know, maybe some other professional services folks, thinking about the networks that we're going through on LinkedIn and things like that. But, there are an awful lot of us in professional services, an awful lot of us that went to architecture school that didn't get, really any business training, but certainly not accounting or finance. So we don't know what we don't know sometimes. Oftentimes we are stressed out, again, probably because we're not looking. We don't even know what we're not looking at. But I love this idea that you have brought up and that you mentioned from time to time about looking at the numbers, understanding these things so you have the ability to make good decisions instead of bad decisions. So can you explain the distinction there, right? Why am I likely to make bad decisions?
So I think, you know, for me now being in the industry 14 years, I've gotten to know my architects and my designers and how you guys function and how
we're sorry.
Very, very smart, very, very smart group of people. But I've gotten to see how it's quite easy to get very, not caught up, right? But run with the design, right? You're running with the design and you keep running and you keep running and you forget that as you're running with your design, it's costing you time and time equals money, right? Especially on projects, right? So, when I say making good decisions, right? So for example, let's say in your proposal, you had written that you were only going to do 2 test fits, but you're not paying attention or tracking or consistently looking to make sure that you've now not gone to go outside of scope. When you go outside of scope, that's going to be a bad decision for you because it's affecting your profitability at the end of the day. It's affecting how much cash you keep.
Right.
Also, it's affecting the money you're leaving on the table, right? So our profession, we are notorious for giving out free work, free work. And so when you're now paying attention to your numbers, right? Knowing exactly what should I be looking at even, right? Not, you don't need to use all my fancy terms that come along with accounts receivable, accounts payable, earning, right? You need to know what reports you should be looking at. So, for example, the example I gave of, you're supposed to do 2 test fits. And if the client comes and says you should do a 3rd one, well, that's a flag. But if you're not paying attention to it, you're making a bad business decision, right? So that's just a simple example, that I would give when I say in terms of good decision and bad, not so good decisions that are affecting your bottom line. I want all of us, like small firms, to be in a position where you're actually making money, where you're staying in business for the long term, where you actually get to do what you love, which is design. But you can't design if you're not looking at the numbers. They go hand in hand. So that for me is the distinction, right? Am I tracking my hours? Timesheets is a problem, or like recording time is a problem, no matter your firm size, right? If you have a fee and you're not looking at the hours that go alongside that fee and the cost, how do you know if you're staying to budget?
Yeah.
Right? How do you know if you should take on more work from this particular client? Mm-hmm. How do you know how to bid for the next job, right? Like, let's say you're not, the job costs you $100,000. What if you came under? If you're not tracking how much it's actually costing you to do a particular job, then how are you going to know how to go for the next job or how to add more profit, knowing that it takes you less time, right? So again, I like to give examples, right, that we can all relate with, but that's good decision versus bad decision, right? So these things, there's so much that lies in just paying attention to our numbers again. And I love, my motto is to keep it so simple, keep it stupid simple, right? Like you said it clearly, you didn't go to accounting school. But unfortunately, in architecture school, you're not giving these foundational skills that you need if you were to become a business owner or to be. I see in the comments, timesheets is the bane of yes, it is. We've come up with all sorts of tactics in my firm to make sure people do their timesheet. But yeah, let me wrap up my thoughts. I just got sidetracked by that. But yeah, so much power. And then having that foundation of making sure it's set, or even if you've been in business a really long time, we talked about mindset earlier. Like if you don't address the fact that one, maybe you're not so good at your numbers, but you know you need to change, your business is not going to grow as much as it can if you don't address that mindset, that fear that we have of, oh, well, I don't really want to like peel behind and see. I don't really want to hold myself accountable. I'll just keep scrambling to win client, to get the next job. You will constantly be in a state of scrambling rather than being in a state of understanding what you should go for, what you shouldn't go for, making the right strategic decisions for your business so you can stay in business.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it's so when I introduced you at the beginning, I said you're a CFO, but I don't think I said at any point yet what you're CFO of. So you are the chief financial officer of Mancini Duffy.
Yes.
Which I'm guessing that many of them in our audience know Mancini. They've been around a little while.
way before I was even thought of.
Yeah. Long before you graduated from college, they've been around. Yes. 116 years or so by now?
Yes. Well, 1915. So we're at 106.
Okay, 106. Okay, so that's a good amount of time. So they have found a way to sustain themselves. One of the things that I said in the intro that is fascinating to me, you know, you were talking about your past in some other interviews where you didn't want to go into accounting because that's what your mom did. I was the same way. My dad was an accountant, and there were a lot of differences between the two of us personality wise and things. And so I ran, rightly so. I mean, he much more numbers guy, and I'm more on the creative side, but you didn't escape that from your mom.
Oh my goodness. No, I surely did not. It was really funny. It was funny the day so my mom lives in Nigeria still. It was funny the day she came to Mancini's office when I had just joined as controller. And her last, like before she went out into her own business, her last position was a financial controller for a media company, right? So we both ended up in different industries, but same exact track. Even though I ran away from it in college.
Right. Yeah, the when you talked about your degree in math, right?
Yeah.
And then interviewing for your first job in an architecture firm, by the way, which I also think is interesting. You have a degree in math, and now you've spent your entire career in design firms, which it's, you know, we do have an audience of mainly small firm architects. But every single one of these small firm owners or employees have to deal with the math, have to deal with invoicing on some level and paying bills on some level. But you're the legitimate. You're the CFO or the controller. Start out as project accountant. Mm-hmm. To me, that's one of the interesting things as well, that you spent an entire career like. Probably everybody in the audience has spent an entire career in this industry, but you've come at it from a completely different way.
Yes. Totally different. And if you don't mind, I'll share. So what actually sparked my interest in the industry? I came from Nigeria to go to college here. And I came to do computer engineering. I took physics my first semester. I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing computer engineering. Let me study math because I was really good at math in high school. A teacher had spotted that out. And I really enjoyed my math courses at Hunter College, where in the city where I went, New York City. I forgot we have a vast, our crowd is from all over. But in high school, I had taken a technical drawing class. And so fast forward, you know, 5 years, about to graduate, I'm an international student. I need to find work wherever, whoever to sponsor me. I stumbled on this job posting it for an architectural firm. And because I took technical drawing in high school, I had my huge TD board and the T-square that we used to have. That literally was why I applied for that job. I said, I think it'll be interesting, to work in an architecture firm, even though I had no clue what a junior project accountant did, even though I knew I didn't want to do accounting, but I was like, okay, it's not pure accounting, right? I'm not in an accounting firm. So I'm still running away from my mom's track. And that's how I ended up here. And here I am now 14 years after literally worked my way up, a double promotion, as I call it, somewhere in between where I moved from senior project accountant to controller, right? And my mind blown, and one of my most, you know, proudest moments of my life is now actually owning part of this 100-year-old firm, right? So
yeah.
How does a little 18, 17-year-old girl from Nigeria blink and all of a sudden this is where she is now? It's, I think for me, being in the industry and what has been my differentiator is also just my interest in the projects, right? I always wanted to approach, the accounting piece of it, understanding a bit of the design. Like, what phase is this? I might not know what's on the drawings, but if I understand where you're at in your project, while I'm looking at the numbers, right? If you tell me, Jeff is supposed to work on this project 20 hours a week. Well, my job as your partner, right? I hate the term back office, your accountant, and you as a business owner, right? When you switch hats, remember, right? If you projected 20 hours and then you're going over, well, there needs to be a flag. And so my job, you know, essentially is to make sure projects were successful. I apologize. I don't know if my sound came in. But essentially my job is to raise that flag early enough for you so that you as a project manager or now, you know, on a firm level, we as firm owners can make the right decision. There's that triple constraint triangle, right? Scope, time, resource, scope, time, and cost. And so your accountant or you, when you put on that hat, you should be thinking about that. But thinking about that in relation to the qualitative part, which is what you guys are doing on the design part, right? So the numbers help me ask you the right questions. And then when I ask you the right questions as you're designing, you feed back to me, then we can track. We know, okay, well, if you went over a little bit on one phase in programming or in schematic, well, can we make it up in design development, right? How can we make sure that your project ends up finishing strong? Not just that the client is happy, but that you haven't burnt yourself out. From a money perspective.
What if you could visualize your building in just a couple of clicks, remove months from your design process? Or what if you could even create a bridge between stakeholders to solve problems before they even come up? Well, our friends at Twinmotion offer simple real-time visualization for architects just like you. Their technology lets you view and edit your scene on the go in the same pixel-perfect quality as the final rendering. Twinmotion seamlessly integrates with other tools like SketchUp and Revit, and it transforms your BIM or CAD models into high-quality images and panoramas, standard or 360-degree VR videos, or even your final presentations. Sound complicated? Well, what if I told you that Twinmotion enables anyone to present their biggest ideas in the easiest way possible, no matter what experience you have with graphics softwares? That sounds like something even I could use, but don't take my word for it. Check it out yourself by downloading your exclusive free trial at twinmotion.link/clarity. That's twinmotion.link/clarity to try Twinmotion for free. Monograph is building a community of like-minded firm owners and operations leaders who are looking for solutions that align with their firm's values. On top of that, Monograph is building the only cloud-based practice operations software built exclusively for architects by architects. Monograph's easy-to-use and beautifully designed software allows you and your team to know in near real time whether you are on pace to deliver a project on budget. With Monograph, you and your team can plan project schedules, budgets, role assignments, and team members all in one place. What's the best part of Monograph? And this is a big one for me. It doesn't require a degree in finance to use. To experience the difference today, sign up for a free trial at monograph.com. And to underscore their commitment to the architecture community, On August 12th, Monograph will be hosting their first ever virtual conference. It's called Section Cut. This one-day event brings firm owners, operations leaders, and project leaders together to learn from success stories and workshops, all with the goal of improving their business. Reserve a seat at Section Cut today by visiting sectioncut.com. So you just described, you know, the way that the business of architecture works. And that's one of the things that's really impressed me about your story as well, is that, I mean, you have gone all in this profession, in this industry, even to the point that a couple of the initiatives that you have started. So for all of our audience out there, just get the term "she builds" into your mind, because several initiatives that Belonlius has started all start with "she builds." So there's "She Builds Lives," there's "She Builds Waves," and "She Builds Money." And I know two of those are specifically for this industry. One for women in the industry, I think, which is Waves. She Builds Waves, and then small firm owners, I guess, if that's fair to say, She Builds Money. Can you talk about maybe start first with She Builds Waves? What's She Builds Waves about?
Yeah, sure. So. So She Builds Waves was birthed in 2019, you know. So as I mentioned, I joined Mancini as controller in 17, 18 I became CFO, 19 I became part owner. And for me, being in a leadership position, I'm always trying to, again, you'll notice me that service is such a huge part of my life in general, but I'm always trying to think about ways that can have larger impact, not just in my organization, but beyond. And so She Builds Waves really was birthed because I was looking for, ways of holding space for women within the industry, no matter your department, right? So I feel like, you know, a lot of the organizations now, I love them all and get a lot of support from them, but a lot of them serve the folks on the floor, the designers, the architects, but they're people like myself who have made a career within the industry, right? Or allies, as we'll call us, right? How can we break departmental barriers where, you know, the designer, the architect, the HR person, legal, all these women are coming together to have conversations that affect how we show up at work, right? So we can do our work really well. We have great designers. I'm a great financial professional, clearly. but there's so many other factors that affect how we show up. And so, like, what does success look like for somebody like me? You know, I would say for me, I call myself a unicorn also within the industry because, you know, it's very tough within the accounting groups, especially if, you know, if you're in a small firm, a large firm, it's very tough to find your way path up, right? And so I think about a lot of us as growing wide, right? Like, what else are we adding to our career toolkits or to, you know, what does success look like? If you don't have that traditional trajectory up, and how can we all support each other, right? How do we begin to talk in our organizations or in our firms about non-tangible value that we're bringing to the table, right? So there are, you know, for the folks on the floor or even accountants, right? Maybe, you know, you have the regular things, you're doing your work well, you're meeting your targets, but maybe you enjoy speaking. Is there an opportunity in your organization to either be part of a lunch and learn, right? Lunch and learn is the best example. I don't think I've been in any organization, in any of my organizations where the lunch and learn is a finance lunch and learn or a legal lunch and learn, right? You guys just forget us. So that was the point, right? Bringing women together to have these conversations, feeling that support in a network, And then of recent, with COVID, of course, so we used to meet in person. It was just, I used to hold them once a quarter. But we used to meet, with COVID happening, we pivoted to something called, the growth workshops, right? So where I'm bringing on experts to help us add things into a career toolkit that can set us up for success. A perfect example, I brought somebody that helps with negotiations. How do you negotiate, pay? How do you negotiate time, right? Because sometimes it might not be only pay, but maybe you can negotiate extra time. Maybe you can negotiate flexibility. So things like that. So that's She Builds Waves. She Builds Money, I call She Builds Money my COVID baby. And I think a lot of our listeners will really enjoy She Builds Money. Guys, you need to go on there. There are so many free resources. But again, position of service and giving back to others. I have spent 14 years now immersing myself in finance within the industry. How can I create a platform that can break down finance, cash flow? I mean, so I started off with cash flow, of course. Well, the idea was pick one problem, just one, that I know small firm owners might struggle with. I mean, we all struggle with it clearly from last year, but pick one problem and can you create a tool that can help small firm owners begin to feel in control of their cash, right? Understand how cash flow works. Can you create a tool that can teach them from start to finish, right? And in that tool, so I have something called the cash flow tool. In that tool, we use simple terms, right? You don't care about accounts. I say this again. You don't care about accounts receivable. You care about who owes me money. Who do I owe? You understand what I mean? And there's you're not a trained accountant. It's not your job to like now all of a sudden be this graduated from college accounting professional. But if you're able to understand and break down these terms so that it's more digestible, so that it doesn't feel so overwhelming to small firm owners, then I feel like you'll find more people willing to actually take that step to now beginning to track your numbers, right? So I think you had mentioned, sometimes firm owners don't even know where to begin. Mm-hmm. So I created a free resource. It's called the Finance Task at a Glance. What should you be looking at daily? Are you checking your bank balance? I mean, maybe traffic isn't as much, but you set a rhythm and you stick to it. What should you be looking at weekly? What should you be looking at monthly? A lot of us wait till the end of the month, right, to now start like pulling receipts. Then before you can finally like package your invoice, guys, that cash flow, your bills are constantly coming to people you owe. They're constantly invoicing you. But if you don't invoice to your clients on time, you're not going to be able to take care of your bills, right? You're not going to be able to take care of your bills. But why is that? It's because you're leaving it and you're not doing it consistently enough. It all boils down to habits, mindsets, and having the right financial habits. So really quickly, I'll say in that cash flow tool, the first thing I tell you in that tool is go into your calendar and set a weekly finance meeting with yourself. If you don't do that, don't even move forward. Don't even move forward, right? Because that's the first step to saying, okay, I'm going to clear out, I'm going to make out time to actually take a look at this.
Okay, how much time? Well, I'm doing it right now. So what? How much time? 15 minutes?
Start with 15, right? So I always tell people, you don't want to go from zero. I mean, that's the same, right? Go from zero to 100. No, you want to go from zero to 10. Right. If this is because you're trying to change a habit. You're trying to change a habit, right? You're trying to curb your bad habit of not looking at your numbers or not paying attention to your numbers. So 15 minutes and you pick three tasks. I'm going to check my bank balance. I'm going to pull, you know, if you have bills to pay or, you know, I'm going to see what I have to pay. And you know, if it's month end, you say, okay, well, I'm going to look at how much money went out, how much money came in. Because at the end of the day, as a small firm owner, when you get to month end, you want to know that you've done all your invoicing. You want to know that, you know, when you look at your cash, if you had more cash come in, that's great. What did you do right? If you had more cash go out, well, okay, that's still fine. What happened? You want to know that if you have insurance renewals coming up, you're prepared and you're not with a huge bill. You want to know that, so again, this is my style of giving examples so that you can actually connect, you know, but, taxes, quarterly, you need to pay your quarterly taxes. Well, I have you planned for it, right? Mm-hmm. So like, if you're not looking at it frequently in bite size, chunks that you're able to then, you know, build up, right? So you move from 15, then maybe you move it to 30, then maybe you're like, you're just a whiz at it. And, you know, but yeah, like that is how to approach it if you don't already have a system.
Yeah. I think that's great. I mean, our audience hears me say this all the time. It doesn't matter what topic we're talking about in any given week, but, you know, what I say is, I don't care if you don't have a system today. I don't care if you don't understand your cash flow today, but when you find out, when you figure out that you need a system or that, oh, hey, there is this thing called cash flow that I need to be paying attention to, then from that day forward, it's all about, I always say 1% improvement every day.
Love it. Yeah.
It's exactly what you're saying. It's how do we, I'm a big fan of the book, Atomic Habits.
Oh yes. Love it.
And I'm trying to remember the author off the top of my
James
head.
James Clear.
Yes. 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 Breaking those things down. Basically, what you just described, break it down into the smallest pieces possible to build those habits. So I see a lot of comments here. You know, somebody said guilty. Somebody said, okay, you know, I need to set these meetings. If we assume that there's one person in the audience that doesn't have a handle on their cash flow today, and you just kind of outlined this already. And somebody says, I scheduled that meeting, but now what if I ignore it? What do I do now?
Yeah, that was not me, but it could have been me. I did not write that, but that's totally me. I schedule stuff and then I don't do it. So anyway, continue what you were saying there.
Yes, because what has now happened is other things have taken priority, but this is the most important thing for you as a business owner. You didn't go into business to just, you know, would I say la-di-da, or, you know, you went into business because maybe one, you if you were working for someone else, you now wanted to work for yourself, but you want to be able to provide for yourself, provide for your family. Maybe if you want to grow, you know, maybe that's one of your goals. So this now has to become priority. And I think when you ignore it, maybe it's now still too big, right? So if it's not 15 minutes, break it down to one task, 5 minutes. I'm going to, until you build that habit. But again, it's not about the numbers. It's about our personal habits, right? We're all people running these companies or running these firms, right? And our personal habits flow into how we run our businesses, right? You're not one, if you really go down deep into it, right? You're not a different person all of a sudden once you get into your business. And so, I will say you need to make it priority. Right. Maybe this conversation that we're on today is another reminder to prioritize, not ignoring. Maybe you add some friction into James Clear talks about this, right? Adding friction, when you're trying to break a bad habit, right? So maybe there's something you need to add in. Like if you ignore it, you don't get, coffee for the, I don't know, come up with help me with an example, right? There's something that you have to add in so that this really becomes important to you.
Yeah. I love that idea of not only adding friction, but removing friction. Oh. So, you know, the adding friction to break the habit, but remove friction to build the habit.
Yes.
And I think you're exactly right. It's, you know, as small business owners, which a lot of our audience are, and you said it earlier, right? Putting on this hat, putting on that hat, they're wearing 17 hats. So a lot of this does come down to prioritization and discipline.
Yep. Yep. It's, you got to be disciplined. You have to hold yourself accountable. The way I think about it is, you know, a lot of times maybe your business is doing just fine, but think about how much better it can be if you just changed, right? So a lot of people might say, yeah, I'm doing fine. My clients pay on time. My bills are paid. I don't ever have to look at it. Well, then maybe there are growth opportunities you're missing out on if you're not paying attention to these things, right? There's always just so much more you can be accomplishing or improving in your business if you fix these inconsistencies when it comes to looking at your numbers. Guys, it's no different. I say it is no different how you're operating your personal life, or, you know, if you want to work out, there, sometimes you treat yourself the same thing.
Yep. Yeah. For those of you that are listening to the podcast, I think Audrey's suggestion here is probably about the ultimate that we could possibly come up with. She says, treat yourself. I used to bribe myself to go to a meeting by doing it at a cafe with a nice coffee or chocolate. That pretty much makes the world go round. So I think that's probably the best way to remove friction ever.
Yes. Yes. I'm all about thinking of ways to remove the friction, right? So, you know, I'll plug again that finance test at a glance. That's a way to remove friction, right? Well, I don't know what to look at. Well, She Builds Money has and guys, I'm so proud of this. It's clickable. You can check it off, right? So you do the test, you check it off, and then you save a copy and say, okay, this is for week ending July 30th. I'm all done with my tasks.
Yeah.
I saw a comment that said, you know, project work gets in the way. Guys, don't forget it's, you know, like you want to do it or you love it, but project work gets in the way. Again, it's priorities. It's 15 minutes. We've already been on this call for almost 15 minutes.
Yep.
That means you have 15 minutes. You found a way to prioritize to being here. Maybe it's because it's something you enjoy, right? But again, something so important to you being successful in business, you need to try to make time for it. It's always a trade-off. And that's why I advise starting smaller. Start with 15 minutes. I even have something called 15 Minute Fridays. Follow our Instagram page.
So, and your Instagram is Bolanli_HQ, right?
Yeah. So that's my personal, but like, you know, if you're looking for more, finance tips, you can follow She Builds Money.
Right.
She Builds Lives. I know we didn't talk about that. My nonprofit is related with the industry too, right? So, it's for, you know, I'm really passionate about education in Nigeria. And one of the things that we do through the nonprofit is build schools. Right. So I recently, in 2019, we recently completed our first school project.
Congratulations.
Guys, come and help me out. You guys lend your skills to children in Nigeria, right? So we're looking to build a free learning center it's called IDP Camp, which is an internally displaced people's camp. So people who had to leave their homes to move somewhere else. And so the idea is, how can we create a center where they could come get help with their education? So that's still our industry related.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so if you're listening right now, and we'll cover this again at the end of the podcast here, or the end of the show, all of these, She Builds Money, She Builds Waves, She Builds Lives, those are three initiatives that Bolanli has, and you can find those all at shebuildsmoney.com, shebuildswaves.com.
Yeah, shebuildslives is at shebuildslives.org.
Or because it's a nonprofit. Yes. So we will, again, we'll share that info at the end of the show here. But you know, you were a minute ago, you were talking about, well, we've been talking about priorities, and somebody, you mentioned, you saw the comment where someone mentioned project work gets in the way. Maybe a way to look at it is, in the extreme example, which actually I don't think is necessarily all that extreme, if you continue to allow project work to get in the way, at some point there are no more projects, right? You have to be able to prioritize, your marketing, your business development, the same, right? If you're not bringing in work, if you're not managing your finances, eventually that project work goes away. So we've got to, as small business owners or even large business owners, you just have more people to help you with it. You have to be able to prioritize these things. You have a responsibility to yourself and to your clients and to, you know, whoever depends on you. So I guess, you know, that's a little bit of getting up on the soapbox and preaching about that a little bit. But that's one of the reasons these conversations are so important. What I know we're getting very close to the hour here. So one of the things we start these conversations at 9 o'clock in the morning on Clubhouse, on the Clubhouse app. We have a little coffee talk is what we call it. And one of the things that came up today, and I think this is really interesting about this time right now, there are a lot of firms that are really busy right now, small firms and large firms that are really busy right now. And yet there are some who are completely opposite, right? The pandemic has really hurt them and really shut them down and their clients down, et cetera. And so they're really struggling. If you take the instance of a small firm owner, maybe they're struggling now because, they don't have a lot of work, mm-hmm. struggling with the cash flow for obvious reasons if they don't have a lot of work. If you were to find yourself, if you're a small firm owner that found yourself right now sort of in the dip, what's your maybe a couple of tips for somebody that's in that dip to try to right the ship and find their way back or find their way out of that? Are there any measures that they need to take to kind of shore things up?
Yeah. I feel like the phase that we're in right now, like you said, is weird in our industry in general, where either, everyone is now ready to start work, things are picking up. However, you close on a project, it doesn't mean that cash comes in
right
away, right? Like, so we're in that weird phase where, you know, your hair is not short, it's not long, you just need to make it through. One of the things that I advise I practice in my firm, as well as, you know, talk to others, is you need to understand what your, one, building relationships with the vendors that you have, with your the current clientele that you have, if you still have, right? Any, right? Because you want to make sure that, one, some way, somehow, your invoices and payments are still coming in, right? And so on the bills don't stop, but the money coming in is what is really affecting a lot of firms now, or what affected us during the pandemic. And so if you still have projects, maybe one or two projects, make sure that you know who is writing your check and who, you know, you can pick up the phone and call to make sure that your payments are coming in on time. What I see happen a lot of times with small firms, and I see it with, you know, consultants or whatever the case may be, is they're not following up on their invoices. You send your invoice out and you're almost afraid to ask for your money for work you've already completed. So the first thing I say you want to do is look at the invoices that you have out. You know, if they're none that haven't been paid in a while, pick up the phone and call. If they, you know, or send an email, make sure you're following up on those payments. The second thing on the expenses side is to really scrub your expenses. Sure, you know, you might not be able to save a huge amount, but one of the things that we did was to either call and ask for extensions on, you know, like, I know your payment terms are 30 days. Well, can I go out to 45 days? Can, you know, like, how much more are your vendors willing to work with you to make sure that at least you can meet your commitments, right? So that's two things, right? In terms of cash flow, it's money coming in, which is your invoices, and bills going, bills that you have to pay, which is money going out, right? So those are the two places that you initially want to start looking at. Then of course, start thinking about what else can I do? What other projects, or how can I ramp up BD, or what, how can I get myself out so that I can increase my revenue, right? So maybe you have your current pool of clientele that you look at. Maybe there's, you know, in your skill set, maybe there are different types of work you can do to help you get through this difficult period, right? You need to increase that money coming in. So you really need to think about how else can I increase my revenue? What else, or, you know, how else can I increase the money that's coming into my business? What else can I do? What other services can I perform? Do I start, again, based on your experience, right? You don't want to go take on some, new project that you have no clue how to do, but just be resourceful, right? And form those relationships. People are the ones paying people. People pay people. Remember that it's not, yes, we send it through emails, but make sure that you're looking for ways to increase your funds, right? And again, it's temporary. Dips happen in businesses. So the other thing I will say, though, is once you kind of make it out through this point, begin to understand, keep track of what were your bare essentials? What were the bare essentials? Like, what did you need when your firm went through this difficult period? What did you cut out? And what did you need? Because, yes, we might not have another pandemic, but what if a large project you're working on goes on hold?
Right. Yeah.
Right? May I ask a kind of a stupid question?
Yeah.
Possibly. So I know that I'm not alone in my anxiety of calling up the, you know, the person who owes me money, or the people who owe me money. Like right now, people owe me $22,000. So it'd be super nice to get paid.
Look at you, floating business.
So I'm writing it down. I got my paper. So what do I say? I call them up and I say, hi, could you pay me? No, I can't say that. So hi, wonder if you got my invoice. Or do I say, so yeah, I'm about to start invoicing again and I haven't gotten the payment yet. I mean, what can I say? And I'll just use your words and then I won't pay.
So you've already laid it out, right? So here's one thing. Before I say what you can say, here's one thing. It is work you perform. This is your money. This is, you know, like, you have already expended time for you to create that invoice, right? So you shouldn't, as a business owner, don't let your fear of reaching out or picking up the phone, or you had a contract. There's a legal document signed between you and the client, right? That you perform services, they pay you for the service. So don't be afraid to ask for what is yours. So now in terms of what you say, right? Hi Jeff. Trust this meets you well today. I am following up on invoice number XXX. Wait,
is this a phone call or is this an email?
You can do an email. You can do a phone call, depending on the relationship you have with the person. I am huge on, you forming relationships. So if you don't have a relationship with the person who's paying you, and what I mean by relationship, I don't mean you're now all of a sudden best friends, but at least, you know who to reach out to consistently. And the other thing that I will say before I go back to that email is you as a business owner, you don't want to be reaching out after your invoice is due for payment. So let's say you have a 30-day payment terms. You should be reaching out to Jeff. You're the person who owes us money.
Yep.
You should be reaching out to Jeff around day 20. Hey, Jeff, just touching base, making sure that you, received my invoice and there are no issues. You can say that there are no issues with my invoice and that we're scheduled for payment on. Now, whether Jeff responds is a different case. But you're, what that is doing is you're setting a standard, right? Your client now knows there's a standard to expect from you. By the time you do this 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, again, you become at the forefront of their mind. When it's time to make payments, they know, you know, they will remember Catherine, right? Okay, like let's add Catherine's payments. Or they will be like, we don't even want to get Catherine's email. Or we don't want to get Catherine's phone call.
That's true.
I'm not saying that this work, this is, you know, but again, as for you as a business owner, you're showing people how what the standard is or the right way it is that you run your business.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like Verizon harasses you if you don't pay your bill, like the day it's due. So unlike other people, you know, you can go another 20 days.
Yes, right.
So they've trained me to pay my bill and the other people have trained me not to pay my bill until later.
Yeah, so I, you know, again, I don't want you waiting on the 40th day for, and we know like if you don't get your $22,000 invoice, I know what that can do for a small firm.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like a large firm that, okay, they don't get their $22,000 invoice. So there are ways, right? Or ways to make it through, but that can cripple a small business, not receiving a check of that size. You know, thankfully all is, you know, we're here. You look great. So all is well in your business, but you know, you want to get out of that. You want to get out of that cycle of floating. Company.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you haven't used the word yet, but in addition to none of us having been trained as accountants in architecture school, we also were not trained to be banks.
Yes.
And you know, I there's a lot of people right now commenting about whether they're comfortable, whether they're not. They used to be, now they're not. You know, whatever, and. You know, the fact of the matter, and you put it a slightly different way, but it's, you are providing banking services. If you're not, you know, if these people owe you this money and you're not collecting on it. So, you know, they wouldn't hesitate to call you.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that you can think about, I don't know, but sometimes, you know, putting interest language. Mm-hmm. In your contract. Now, do you act on it all the time? No, but you might have a difficult client where you might need to send an interest invoice. And trust me, the one time, even no matter your size, nobody likes to pay interest. Yeah. When you get that, you know, there's a trigger, right? Again, you're not being mean or, you know, you're not trying to be, it's just, you're running a business.
Oh, I know. Right. I know.
You know, at the end of the day. Yeah. Yeah. I see daily compounding interest will speed that along. You're running a business, right? So, you now need to start, how you want your clients or the relationships. It's relationships, right? I say it's habits. It's relationships. You want to make sure you're building your right relationships. And if you have, you know, old clients where it might be difficult, but think about how you want to kick off, right? You guys have a kickoff when you're starting a new project. Well, are you kicking off how you will be invoicing? Are you kicking off the accounting piece of it? Or are you just kicking off the project piece of it, right? So in that kickoff meeting, you're saying, yes, we're going to deliver, you know, I don't know, XX, or this is the schedule, and this is how we'll be invoicing you. Kick it off in that meeting.
That's a great idea. I usually end up waiting till I'm really desperate, and then I end up calling or emailing saying, "Can I come by this afternoon and pick it up? Like, can you take it to your door this afternoon? I'm coming." I'd rather not do that. They could just send it to me earlier. Kind of, yeah. But you're right. Yeah. I mean, I do train people how to treat me. Someone just said that in the comments, you know, by.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you would hope, right? In a perfect world, you would invoice, you get paid right away. But we all don't have the perfect client. Things happen on projects, right? So again, that's why I say sometimes maybe there are delays, maybe the client's not happy, but if you're not communicating and asking these things, you know, there are several things that can hold up your invoice being paid, and you want to make sure that you've addressed, if there are any issues, you've addressed enough of it that you can, that invoice can be paid, right? So there are lots of times, we hear, the invoice was lost in email, you know, or several things, right? But maybe the invoice was truly lost, but if you never reached out, maybe they didn't get it. Maybe it went to spam. If you never reached out to follow up, how would you, you know, then you're there waiting many months and not only to find out that somebody didn't get it or it's sitting on someone's desk.
Right. No, you're right. Yep. You're right. I've written down what you said, and I'm definitely going to do it. And it's startup, number one, don't be afraid is the first step. So
simple.
Number two.
Right. Yeah, right? That's a mindset, right? You're releasing yourself from a mindset of asking for what is yours. Legally, it's yours. Even if you don't, maybe you put Catherine, the personal down, be like, my legal hat. You need to put on your legal hat and say, legally, you know, contractually, they're obligated to meet their financial responsibilities.
So that's going to help. Yeah. I'm going to put this up on my monitor later. It's going to tape it up.
Just call me. I'll pay you.
Call Jeff and he'll be the guy getting all your invoices paid.
I'm changing my phone number tonight.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at the time, and we have gone past your hard stop time.
We can keep talking about this, but yeah, I'm actually going to Nigeria tomorrow.
So, wow. Okay.
I just, you know, the day before, trying to get things in place in the house and all of that.
Completely understand. Enjoy that trip.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you coming on and talking to us today.
This was so much fun.
Oh, yeah. You've been such an inspiration. So thank you.
Thank you. And to everybody out there in the audience, certainly that's live, but also listening, there are a few ways that you can find out more. If you are a member of the Entree Architect, or if you're part of the Entree Architect membership, go check out the expert training session that Wilanli presented at the beginning of June. The recording is in the archive right now. You can listen to that. It's a fantastic presentation. Of course, you can go to any of the websites for her initiatives that we mentioned earlier. The first is She Builds Money. So shebuildsmoney.com. That's a financial resources for small firm owners. The second was She Builds Waves, which is a resource for women in design. And the third that we mentioned was She Builds Lives. So the first two is shebuildsmoney.com, shebuildswaves.com, and then shebuildslives.org. And that's her not-for-profit that is focused on building schools and supporting children in Nigeria. So lots of places that you can get more information and participate in the communities that Wilanli is building. Also check out She Builds Money on at She Builds Money on Instagram. And if you want to connect with her personally, go to at Wilanli_HQ on Instagram.
Yeah, we didn't talk about this, but guys, you will, I know you guys have a party, theme parties. I'm a huge theme party person. So you might run into some of that on my personal page, but I'm happy to connect, you know, on all my platforms. And last, if it's okay, can I share one last thing? The community, I actually have my first business book coming out in the fall.
Oh, great.
Oh, great.
Yes, it's called Build Boldly.
All right.
Career path and lead with courage. Yes.
Nice. All right. So you can get that information at your website?
Yes, yes. More of that to come.
Okay, so go to
Wilanli.com.
There you go. And for those of you in the audience that's on the screen right now, if you're listening, that's BOLANLEWO.com. So BOLANLEWO.com. And if it's all right with you, we would like to invite you back once you have your book published and you can talk about the book.
Thank you. Would love to do that.
All right. We would love that as well. So to all of you in the audience and all of you listening in the future, we appreciate all of you. Thank you for participating in this conversation with us. Thanks for all of your comments that have been streaming while we've been talking here. We appreciate all of you being part of the Context and Clarity community here and showing up and making Context and Clarity a thing. So thank you for that. As always, I encourage you to be well, stay safe, stay well, keep those around you safe and well. Find some way to take a little bit of time this evening and relax, rejuvenate a little bit, because we're going to come back tomorrow and do this all over.
You guys are the MVPs.
We'll be back, same bat time, same bat channel, 4 p.m. Eastern, inside the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. If you want to get started early, join us on the Clubhouse app in the Context and Clarity Club at 9 a.m. Eastern. And tomorrow, our topic will be, this is a question I came up with. I'm not really sure exactly what it means, but basically I want to think outside the box. Have you ever used any non-traditional project financing? That could be in terms of getting it built. That could be in terms of paying for your fees, whatever. I'm just really wanted to think outside the box tomorrow when it comes to the way finances flow through projects. So that'll be the topic tomorrow, both at 9 a.m. Eastern on the Clubhouse app and at 4 p.m. Eastern inside the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. So again, thank you to all of you for joining us. Thank you, Balanli, for being our special guest today.
And thank you for having me. This was great.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. And Catherine, thank you once again for co-hosting and keeping this train on the rails. All right. With that, thank you, everybody. We'll see you again sometime somewhere soon.
Bye.
Before we go, I want to say thank you to Twinmotion for their support of this episode of Context and Clarity Live. Visit Twinmotion today at twinmotion.link/clarity and try Twinmotion for free. And also, thank you to Monograph for their support of this podcast episode. To reserve a seat at their first ever interactive virtual conference, visit sectioncut.com today. Thanks for listening to this week's Context and Clarity Live episode. Selfishly, I love these conversations because I get to be the go-between between you and some really incredible guests. To that end, I want to know what you think about today's guest. Message me on the socials. I'm really easy to find. I'm Jeff_Eccles everywhere. If you happen to run across a white-haired chiropractor from Austin, Texas, yeah, that's not me. I'm the other Jeff Eccles. Oh, and if you have an idea for a future guest, tell me who it is and why you think they'd be a good guest for one of these conversations. Maybe we can get them on a future episode. Thanks again for listening. I appreciate you, and I'll see you next week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick. So when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gary. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.